Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks for coming along on this Monday night here at the Alex Hotel. We are here with thanks to Virgin Media Sport, who've over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games live this season. All of these games available to all Virgin Media TV customers, who can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream the action whenever and wherever they like. We have our two winners for a competition. We're going to be putting them questions to Graeme Souness very shortly. We're going to get all our pundits back on stage. Give it up again for Graeme Souness, for Brian Kerr, Damian Delaney, and for the first time tonight, Keith Andrews. Welcome, Keith.
Hiya.
So, a couple of questions to ask you.
Have you?
How's life going with the 21s?
Very well, yeah. All good. Good year.
Yeah.
Good calendar year. Got ourselves into a decent position, so hopefully we can get a good result next month against Iceland, because that's going to be massive.
You do look to the manner born in the dugout. Very angry man at times. Bloody hell, you give the refs a hard time.
I spent too much time with Graham, don't I? So he's rubbed off. No, I've calmed down a lot. A lot.
So not as much as I'd like to be.
In the dugout?
No.
He's definitely calmed down a lot.
Haven't I, then?
Oh, honestly. 22-year-old Keith, oh my God. Fight with everyone and anyone. Literally.
Really? I've only ever seen, it's a bit like working with Roy Keane, I've only ever seen there must be two Roys.
I'm trying working with him.
I only work with the nice, gentle one.
You're comparing Keith to Roy Keane.
Yeah, I'm thinking I might have to go down that road.
It's the first time for everything,
so
yeah.
You're nastier, yeah?
No.
It was argumentative, Graham, is what it was. Very argumentative. Like, oh, if a manager said that was black or it was white, even if it didn't matter, Keith would just argue it for the sake of it. It might be unfair, though.
But I learned.
Oh, good.
Which is important, isn't it?
Fair play.
I think we met each other at a good stage, Graham.
Have you enjoyed it more than you expected, getting back into the coaching?
Yeah, like, I missed it. I'm very passionate about it. It was circumstance, obviously, work-wise. I was enjoying media. Family-wise, I moved back to Ireland, so it was the right thing to do at the time, and then that opportunity came along, and, yeah, I probably didn't realise how much I missed it, and it's been good. We've got a very talented group of players that are a joy to work with. They want to play for their country. They want to improve. You feel like you give them a little bit, and you see that come to fruition. It's a nice feeling, and obviously the group's gone very well so far.
It is incredible the amount of young players are coming through, even if you look at the four teenage attackers playing in the Premier League this season. Obviously, the work has been on for quite a while. At 17, so I know you're involved with it at one stage as well, with Colin O'Brien and Tom Moen. Is it just a number of factors all coming together, or is this something we can look forward to, a conveyor belt over the next few years?
Look, it's not set in stone. I think there has been good work that's gone on in the last few years. You're reliant on good players as well. It's not just about the coaching and the infrastructure and bits and bobs you put in place, which have been very good. You need good players, and they've developed very, very well, but they still need to keep going. They're at a good age now where they're getting a few of them first team football. That needs to continue. You can only do so much from an international perspective, obviously.
It'd be an incredible achievement, obviously, to qualify for a 21s finals for the first time. I'm sure you'd love to be there, yeah?
Yeah, I would.
When are they taking place? That's a stare and a half. Bloody hell. You any questions from Graham?
I'm surprised he's Mr. Angry. I've never seen that in him. I really am.
You thought he was world's nicest man?
I thought he was a nice guy, yeah.
You didn't see him at Euro 2012 when he got sent off in anger. For Ireland, yeah.
Seriously.
You didn't know this.
I knew nothing about this. I just said, I've only met a charming, knowledgeable young man, respectful young man, but he's got the nasty side, has he?
You seem a bit shocked.
I've gone up in his
age. Yeah. Finally, a bit of age. You might get angry now, Graham, because we have a couple of questions from the audience, from our prize winners. Barry Kavanagh, who's sitting just right there in front of you, wanted to ask you...
Before you say that, it only dawned on me. See, at the start of the show, you said there was any Man United supporters here. How shit must Man United be that they're here and not at home watching? And not watching their team.
Yeah, well. So can you blame them?
You've come to listen to a lot of Liverpool chat rather than watch your own team. Sorry, chaps. I think they've gone,
only,
actually.
There's only one of them, I think.
I think they've gone.
Manchester United have just gone in front, by the way. Anthony Martial scored.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, wait a second. There's a few more of them all of a sudden.
I forget. Is that 35 points are behind now?
That's about right. So Barry Kavanagh down here says, ask Graham, would he get in this Liverpool team and who would he get in ahead of?
It's not for me to answer that.
Sure, you're 60-something.
But it was the guy pissed.
He's sitting right there.
Well, you know, obviously, if they win the league this year, there's going to be comparisons made, which I still think is premature. Because, again, I was lucky enough to play in teams that were winning it nearly every year. And Man United never did what we did, which was dominate Europe and domestic. So I think as good as they are, they've still got to, you know, rack up a few more titles and a few more European Cups before they can be talked about with some of the players I played with. But I think I'd be amazed if they don't do it because there's lots of life left in this team. You know, there's only James Milner at 34 and the rest of them are an age where they should only get better. So I see them having a really, really good period going forward from here.
Kevin Ryan wanted to ask you, your best and worst signing as Liverpool manager and best and worst signing of your managerial career?
Well, I've had a lot of them. I think going back to Liverpool in this, I think Liverpool, their signings they've made in the last 6-7 years has been unbelievably good. And I don't think, if you look back to Fergie, Arsene Wenger, anybody, any top manager, nobody gets them all right, but Liverpool, who would you say has not come up to scratch? Shaqiri and maybe Keita so far. The rest of them have just been sensational. Who knows, signed some proper dumplings, but also signed some good players. So, you know, I'm sitting on the fence. I've got, you know, several people I could name on both scores.
You're too polite.
Yeah.
Go with that. So we are here with thanks to Virgin Media Sport, who are very much the home of the Champions League, and the next couple of nights will be the place to watch all the big games in the Champions League. So for the next few minutes, before we get into previewing the matches, we're going to look back over the last decade of the Champions League, when it very much became the premier competition in world football, and pick our team of the last decade. Now, a couple, the two beside me here, gave us their teams in advance. Damien and Brian weren't too bothered with the whole, you know, thinking about it ahead of the evening. So we'll see how this goes.
No.
And you usually the master of preparation.
I was sent out a list for a right back, and there was two outside lefts in it. And you were to pick one, right? And then there was you were to pick a right sided midfielder, and there was another two outside lefts in that as well. So whoever come up with the original list. Now, I wouldn't be blaming you, Nathan. I wouldn't say you. But nonetheless, I thought it was a bit comical to have a look at that list.
Wow. Well, this is going to be awkward.
So anyway, I'll give you my 11 when you go through the process.
So I don't know if we have any goalkeeping experts, but the shortlist we had were Manuel Neuer, of course, Champions League winner with Bayern Munich, Keylor Navas, who won 3 times at Real Madrid, and Gianluigi Buffon, legend, but never actually won the Champions League. We had Shane Supple, the former Ipswich Bohemians keeper, in on Thursday, and I put the shortlist to him, and even before I gave him the shortlist, he said, well, I presume it's Alisson. But it feels as though maybe there's a bit of recency bias, is there, when it comes to these Liverpool players? Or do we just have to accept that actually this is a team
well,
that are very
team,
much
I,
in that company?
In my team, I only picked one from the current Liverpool team.
Who'd you pick?
Not telling you.
Hold on.
I thought you were going to read them out.
Nathan.
Manuel Neuer, right. Keylor Navas, Gianluigi Buffon.
And I went for Buffon, even though he didn't get a winner's medal. I just thought he lasted a long time, and he was always top class. Sometimes he was rescuing them when they were struggling badly. But he's gone now. I mean, he's still there at Juventus, and that's one of the weaknesses they have that might stop them winning it this year, that he's still there, and Chesney is first choice. The rest of the team, I like the look of it. But so ask the rest of them.
Should Alisson be on that list? He had a couple of good seasons with Roma. He's come to Liverpool. You're talking about them signings. Has he not transformed Liverpool along with Van Dijk?
Oh, he has. I think that was a great bit of business, getting Van Dijk.
It's too early.
And him for Coutinho's money and having change over. I think that's transformed him from being a nearly team to the real deal.
You went to
Neuer as
well.
He's got pedigree, has he? He's not. I'm thinking back to last year. What did he actually do? Was it against Napoli? He made a ridiculous save. Was it? Yeah. you know, I just didn't know. For me, I picked Neuer because of...
He sort of paved the way for the Alissons and the Edersons of this world?
No, he was just a fantastic goalkeeper over a long period of time.
I think he transformed the way goalkeepers approach the game, though, if you go back 10, 12 years ago, especially for Germany, and more so probably from his feet. Edison's had a lot of compliments, hasn't he, in the last couple of years about the way goalkeepers play with their feet. It's become more prevalent, whereas he, I think, was brilliant, and not just with his feet, obviously.
It's not a new
himself.
Thing. Mm. I played with a guy that, as a central midfield player, it was quite uncomfortable at times when you're sort of halfway up the pitch and you get I'm free, I'm on your right hand side, I'm free, and you turn around, it was Bruce Grobler. Fucking, you know what?
Get back.
So it's not a new thing.
Did you go with Neuer as well?
Well, like, Keylor Navas deserves some discussion. You know, how many trophies has he got? You know, Graham said you have to win multiple trophies, and I don't think you play for a team like Real Madrid and win that many trophies without having something. I never really remember any massive mistakes. He was always solid, he did his job, but I don't think he should be discounted from the discussion, really, you know. But I'll probably go with Neuer, yeah.
All right, well,
I would say
that. The two lads are looking at me going, oh.
No, but Neuer never won it, did he?
Yeah, he did, Jay. He won it in 2013 with Bayern, yeah.
And they beat Dortmund in the final.
Oh, yeah, that was at Wembley. Yeah, I was there.
You remember it well? Right, let's move on. There's going to be no criticism of the shortlist, by the way, Brian. Just go with it.
Well, just keep going. And
right back.
Let the audience...
Well, the audience is sparking a bit of debate in the audience. Right back. Dani Alves, Philippe Lahm, or Trent Alexander-Arnold? So, I sort of grew up like most people, when you're picking your Liverpool 11, and maybe this is the conversation around this current side and just how great they can become, that Phil Neal was the best right-back Liverpool have ever had. Like, is Alexander-Arnold, do you expect in the next 2-3 years he puts himself in that conversation? Is he already there?
I think it's an argument for him being the best around at the moment. You know, I think, you know, no one's really worked out how to play against this Liverpool team. You know, I was asked several months ago, you know, what could go wrong? And people focus on whether it's Mane or Salah or Firmino. But going forward, equally as important to the guys that get the goals are the two fullbacks. The amount of attacking play that comes from the two fullbacks is ridiculous. And if you're going to stop Liverpool, a big part of it has to be in stopping those two fullbacks. And I think there's an argument for those two fullbacks being the best around at this moment in time. You know, Robertson and Trent Alexander.
Is he a pick of that three ahead of Alves and Lahm?
No. No, not, not because he's a boy and he will be, but I liked Lahm. I think Lahm, you know, he's like midfield player in disguise, I thought.
Keith?
I put Alves right back and Lahm left back because I didn't like the left backs.
I said you can't question the shortlist.
That wasn't in the rules.
You were moaning about the list.
Hold on. There was three options and you went for a different one.
Yeah. I remember two of them. Lahm's versatile.
Dani Alves, it was for me just the most exciting right back. He's fabulous.
You're Dani Alves?
Dani Alves, yeah, he was
Brian.
So exciting.
Lahm. I had Lahm on my list. I had Lahm on my list, yeah.
All right, so we'll go with Philippe Lahm. The left back, Jordi Alba, Ashley Cole, or Marcelo? Brian?
I always had a penchant for mad blokes, so I went for Marcelo. I think I just... He's not really he isn't a left back in the traditional sense of stay back there and do your job and don't let the winger get crosses in. But I just thought he was very effective as a team player. And I sat close in Cardiff. I was lucky enough to be able to get a ticket for the final in Cardiff against Juventus. And he wasn't too far away where I was sitting in the second half of the match. I just looking at him, the physical nature of him, the speed that he ran with the ball, his aggression getting forward, his involvement in the goals. I think over the length of time, even despite the madness and unpredictability of him, I think he's the best of them three.
Damien, did you play against Ashley Cole?
Yeah, I think Did he do nothing the last decade? Because when did he win it? 2012? Did he? Maybe not. But
won the Open 2013?
Yeah, listen, I'm going to go Ashley Cole. I think he was fantastic for
You're very easily convinced in this.
No, but I do like him. He was fantastic. He played to a great level for a very, very long time. And he's definitely a better defender than the other two.
Keith?
I've got a lamb.
Graham, bring some sense to proceedings, please.
I went Ashley Cole.
Yeah? Why not Marcelo?
Fucking heed the ball, as we'd say. I mean, totally fucking... listen, sometime you're asked to defend. You know, you watch him play, he's likely to pop up outside right. Mm. Well, he does. He will pop up outside right.
Is that not part of his brilliance?
No. No, I think he's too hear 'em, scare 'em. Zero discipline. I think Ashley Cole, better defender, the best defender out of those three, and gives you not as good as Marcelo going forward, but all round, sooner or later, he has to defend, aren't you? And that guy's never where he should be when you're under pressure, Marcelo.
Due to Keith breaking the rules, then, Ashley Cole gets in. At left back. All right, centre back. So we've got six centre backs. We'll divide them into 2-3. So first up, we have Mats Hummels, Sergio Ramos, or Rafael Varane. If you're a central midfielder, Graham, which of those three do you want behind you?
Well, I really like Varane. Hummels is not quick enough. Varane is certainly quick enough. But Sergio Ramos, for all his faults, he is a loose cannon at times, but he's a winner. He's an aggressive bugger. You know, and he would want to kick you if he felt it was going to help his team win the game. An out-and-out winner, I'll go for Ramos.
Is that an easy decision, Keith?
Yeah, I put Ramos, didn't I?
You did, yes. Probably picked a central.
I'm not having Hummels. I've never had Hummels. And I do like Varane, but I just think for what he's achieved, and he has been a real leader for them.
A warrior, isn't he?
Just check, did he put Ashley Cole in there? Yeah.
I'm a bit worried about the future for Irish football right now, I got to be honest. Damien, yeah, so you're the centre-back expert
definitely,
here.
Definitely Sergio Ramos. I mean, you can't, you know, Graham said he kicked people, he dragged Salah to the floor in pursuit of victory, so he's the type of guy who would do anything to win a game of football, and I definitely want him on my team.
Brian, you're hardly going to disagree, are you?
No. In one of the finals, he let it go. When they were losing to Atletico, 4 minutes into injury time, went up and got a header at a corner. Got them back in. They won 4-1 after extra time. They just showed leadership to me. He was the one in the game battering the team into pushing forward, going on, restarting the game, getting at them. And he does it, you know, I don't like him as an individual, his way, his nastiness in him, and the moaning and groaning and whinging he does with referees and trying to get other players booked. But as a captain and a leader for his own team, he's exceptional.
Unanimous then for Sergio Ramos, I think fairly straightforward. His centre-back partner, maybe not quite so much. Diego Godin, Gerard Pique, or Virgil van Dijk? Damien. Who would you want to play alongside?
Godin, definitely. Like, it goes without saying. I mean, if you were Godin and Ramos, you're two centre backs. I mean, two nice, aggressive ones. Van Dijk, I know he played in the Champions League with Celtic and had a couple of good results against Barca and things like that. But Pique has been good for me, but not as, you know, maybe kind of waned a little bit. But Godin is still getting it done, really, and he's been the best defender.
Would Van Dijk not compliment Ramos?
We'd want compliment to compliment him, no. We don't do compliments. They're two top centre halves,
right?
Keith? I went for Van Dijk purely for the reason that what he did to that team last year and what he'll do over the next few years. I think he's the best defender in that group, the whole group. I just think he's on a different level, and for that reason, that's why I've put him in, even though he's played a fraction of the games that some of these lads have played in the Champions League, and that's the reason.
Well, if you take the longevity side out of it then, and obviously Sergio Ramos is the success of those six defenders, Graham, what Keith's saying there, just as a pure out-and-out defender from what you've seen and where he is, the level he's at the moment, Van Dijk.
He's the best centre-half in the world, easily. Yep. And I picked him as well. And again, you have to factor in what the other guys have done in the competition over the last 10 years. I mean, I've never been a fan of Piquet. I think if he was in an average Premier League team, he'd find life very difficult. I think Van Dijk is immense. I've never seen him extended, whether it's in a race with someone, or jumping someone, or getting tangled with someone physically. He's a bit of a freak, and he's got the most wonderful technique, and cool as you like, and what a partnership that would be. Getting back to Liverpool, Liverpool might have, if you're picking a world back four right now, you might be picking three of Liverpool's back four.
And the goalkeeper.
That's five.
Brian?
I went with Godin the same as the centre-half here on the basis of he's been doing it for a long time and he's had to carry Atletico Madrid when they were off and getting battered in matches when they had little of the ball. Unfortunately, lost the two finals. But I think internationally and club-wise, he's been a great player and I'd agree that if we were doing it next year, I'd probably be picking Van Dijk and saying, well, that's 2.5 years he's been doing it. But at the moment, only 1.5. So if we're going over 10 years...
I got to the Champions League final the year before as well.
Yeah, that's what I said, 1.5
two
years.
Two and a half.
Only 1.5. Did he come in? Didn't he sign in January?
Yeah.
So that's only 1.5.
Two and a bit. 2 and 2. I'm going to go with the two lads on this side anyways and go with Van Dijk. They're a bit closer to me. Centre midfield. I'm interested in this one, Graham, and your thoughts. Xabi Alonso, Sergio Busquets, or Luka Modric? No, we've got a different one first. All right, let's go with this one then. Iniesta, Ribery, or Schneider?
So that's what I said. Who come up with those three? Two of them are forwards, and the other fellas are...
You've got to squeeze them all in somewhere. You've got to squeeze them all in somewhere. Don't question the process, Brian. Just go with it.
I went with Iniesta. I think Iniesta was just... He had 5 years where he was just unplayable in that Barcelona team. He sort of had recurring nightmares of when they were in their pomp. I was training with them in a five-a-side, you know, Xavi, Iniesta, and, you know, you just couldn't get a kick off them. I mean, he was unbelievably good.
Well, you played against Xavi and Iniesta, Keith. Did you get a kick off them?
No, funny enough. He's the one for me as well out of that list.
When you're on a pitch against them, what is it?
Just the awareness that they have, the top players, and him obviously starting as a winger, drifting into that midfield position, that trio that they had going for both Barcelona and Spain, Xavi, Busquets, Alonso for the national team as well. Just his awareness of where to take the ball, where you are, where the space is, just on a different level and playing with his head up and able to find those little passes. I just thought he was sensational. So one of my favourite players ever to watch.
Spent a bit too much time watching him, I think, was the problem.
I did, yeah.
The little applause is every so often, but probably unnecessary. I can't imagine there's any disagreement between yesterday.
No, this is very
straightforward. Let's go back to that one I was talking about then. Busquets, Modric, or Xabi Alonso? So, Graeme.
This is a difficult one for me. Busquets or Alonso, because I like both of them.
It's between Busquets and Alonso. You don't have Modric?
No.
Why?
It's my choice.
Yeah, but I'm just asking you. I accept it's your choice. I'm just asking you to explain your choice.
I have to say I've never been an enormous fan of Modric. I think, okay, the modern terminology is he recycles the ball. I think that means you keep it and you pass the same colour shirt. And I just, not for me. I'm thinking, who would I have enjoyed playing against most? Out of those three, definitely Modric. And then Busquets is top drawer, not the quickest, top drawer. Another fellow was top drawer as well, Alonso. And it was a really hard one, but I went for Busquets in the end.
I'm just upset I've literally spent the last 5 years listening to John Giles telling me that Luka Modric is the best midfielder of his generation. And you're disagreeing.
Opinions.
Keith?
I don't know. When I look at players, midfield players, I think we've enjoyed playing against them. I would have enjoyed
playing.
Well,
you get at
them. Yeah, but I could have discouraged them. I think it would be the politest thing I can say.
Would you not have been quite brave on the ball? Like, you talk about that Champions League final in Cardiff for Real Madrid against Juventus, and like the amount of times he's willing to drop deep when there's two or three opposition players around him, pick up the ball, lift his head, start off the attacks.
The other two, only better at it than I thought.
We've had this discussion before, myself and Graham. I think he's a little bit harsh on Modric. I would rate him higher. But out of that list, I've gone for Alonso.
Rate him higher than what?
Than what you do.
I didn't say he was a bad player. I think he's a very good player.
I know you don't, but we've had that discussion, haven't we?
How the fuck did he win the World Player of the Year? How did he win the Ballon d'Or?
I wouldn't have rated him that highly, but I do like him. But no, I went for Alonso.
Got his country to the World Cup final.
Sorry?
Got his country to the World Cup final.
Yeah. He was one of 11.
Damien?
Xabi Alonso for me. I think everyone, because he'd done so much at Real Madrid, you forget what he did at Liverpool as well. Yeah. I mean, that gets off, once it gets forgotten about, it gets overlooked a little bit. Busquets, for me, can only play in a certain type of way, the team with the pace, and he just sits there, and he's not very mobile. I definitely think Modric would probably be closer to Xabi Alonso. I think I'd put Modric second ahead of Busquets, to be honest with you, but I'd go Xabi Alonso as my number one.
All right, looks like it's going to be Xabi Alonso. Brian?
Well, it is. Because I am. I have the final vote on this one. But the reason I would go for Alonso ahead of Modric, who I agree with you, Keith, I thought he was outstanding for several seasons, but particularly in the last couple of seasons. And now he's out with the team. But to have a balance in the team, because Xavi has to be the other one. In the other three, it's Xavi, Iniesta and Modric. And if Graham was playing against them, in his prime, they might have found it tough, hard going, because he'd have went through them, all three of them, right? And he'd have passed out past them. I think that Alonso would give a better balance of those three, so that's why I just edge it.
Have you picked Xavi in there as well?
I will do, yeah, when I get
there. I think that's why I went for Busquets. Well, I know that's why I went for more than Alonso, because you've got Xavi and Iniesta, and then Busquets is more defensive-minded than...
Yeah,
but the three
Barcelona fellas together, I mean, it's kind of too easy. I like the bit of tension that there was when they played for Spain.
Beautiful.
You know, the bit of tension, the Madrid-Barcelona thing. But yeah, finding the blend that worked.
Going back to Modric, would you even have him in the same breath when you're talking about Xavi and Iniesta?
Not over the length of time again, but that's that period of time. That final he's talking about in Cardiff when they beat Juventus, he was
I'm not letting off the hook here.
Match.
At their very best. All at their very best. Xavi, Iniesta, can you put Modric in that argument? No. At the very best.
Not in one season. Mm. In that season, I would have. And with Croatia at the World Cup. I mean, you said that there was 11 of them. I would have said there was one of them and another 10 blokes with him. It was Croatia, Modric plus...
Mandzukic
is a centre-forward, big bloke.
Six frosties, Tom.
I tell you, I see Modric.
Bit of a ginger of a centre-half.
I see Modric. You look at David Silva. You look at the areas of the pitch he plays in. He plays in the attacking third. He plays halfway line back towards his own goal. He doesn't get into the most difficult place to play anywhere near as much as Iniesta or even David. He's not in the same league as David Silva. Because he plays, let me explain. In my opinion, he plays deeper, less traffic, less influential. He's recycling the ball. Silva receives the ball up amongst the back four, turning with it. He's got his radar on, so he's not getting any bad smacks from any of the defenders. I would put David Silva way ahead of Modric. Way ahead of Modric. Because of different areas of playing. He's playing in an area where he's not hurting you. If I'm playing against him, I can see him. If I'm playing against David Silva, he's here. I'm playing against Iniesta, he's behind me, he's floating around. I see Modric all the time there. Too easy for me personally. If I'm playing against him, I know I'm going to have a good night.
Well, you mentioned David Silva. He's in our next selection of midfielders alongside Xavi and Toni Kroos.
Young Xavi, innit?
Oof. Oof. Are you going to go for David Silva then?
No, because he's in that category of Xavi. And Silva's an argument for him being...
Keep digging.
...the best Premier League player ever, best Premier League foreigner ever. There has to be an argument for him. But again, he's up against Xavi and Iniesta. If they weren't there, he'd be my next choice, arguably.
Along with Xavi, an automatic Alonso. Selection for everybody?
Yeah, Xavi. Xavi, Iniesta and Alonso were the phenomenal trio. Like, just the blend, everything about them would be perfect.
As Brian was giving out about a little bit earlier, maybe some of those selections in midfield were more attackers than out-and-out midfielders. When you look at the midfielders across world football at the moment, like, is this an area where there aren't quite as many world-class midfielders as there have been in previous generations, or is the game changed, the systems changed, that there just aren't as many midfielders? They're not, as you talk about the fullbacks at Liverpool.
No, Spain was lucky to produce a group of players which enabled them to win a Euros and a World Cup. Mm. They don't come along every generation. It's like talking about Ronaldo and Messi. You know, who's the best? I tell my son, who's football man, I said, enjoy these guys. They do not come along every generation. There's never... Who's the new Messi? Who's the new Ronaldo? The new Ronaldo? There's no one. No one comes anywhere near them. And we should... You know, we're blessed that we had two at the same time. And that's, you know, Xavi, Iniesta, ridiculously good players.
I suspect our next two selections are going to be very straightforward. So right forward, Lionel Messi, Arjen Robben, Mo Salah. We'll keep this short. Yeah. Messi all round. On the other side, Bale, Neymar, Ronaldo. Anyone make a case for Neymar?
No.
Okay, hairdresser.
Right, centre forward then in this team to wrap it up. Karim Benzema, Robert Lewandowski, or Luis Suarez?
Yeah, but not...
Brian.
Yeah, but who decided... Who decided that Ronaldo was a left forward rather than in the centre forwards group?
What side of the bed did you get out of this moment, by the way? Don't bring it tomorrow night.
Just
get it out of your system.
For to be with you tomorrow night, you'll be with me. If I don't sharpen up, you'll have me off at half time. Gone. Anyway, I don't. No, I don't need any of the last three. Deserve to be in if it was a 4-3-3 team. I think.
Why? Who
the three
would
forwards. Well, I think the three forwards should be Messi, Ronaldo, and whatever you have now with the others. But not the last.
We've given you the others.
I have mine written down. I'll tell you as you go along. But
I'm starting with you this time.
Well, I've given you two. Do you want another one?
Yes.
I'll give you Neymar then as well.
But he's not on the list.
But that's from
centre forward. You're putting the centre forward.
Yeah, Ronaldo centre forward. Neymar, right. Messi.
It's against the rules, but anyways.
Yeah, I know. But Sir Keith was against the rules as well. You let him away with it. I don't know what
it's
sort
just
of
been a shambles,
teacher
to be honest.
You are.
Damien.
Luis Suarez for me. I think he fantastic at Liverpool year he had, and obviously at Barca as well. He was.
You play against class. Him.
Mm. Yeah.
How difficult was he to play?
He's the most relentless player I ever. He just never stopped. Just chased everything and anything, and never gave a moment's peace, and just frightened the life out of you.
Did he bite you?
Putting it up to his shoulder. No.
But I mentioned right at the start, obviously, that goal you scored against Liverpool to spark the comeback from being 3-0 down. That was...
You move on, Lisa. We're not talking about that.
That was Suarez's season, obviously, where he was just unstoppable. And like talking of transformative Premier League players over the last decade, would he have been the best striker you came up against?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. It's a relentless work. Not just because of his goals, but he just terrified you. Just the way he walked, he meant business, he just chased everything, and you just worried with him, really, for me.
Did you ever play well against them?
Yeah, that did okay. Like, we drew 3-3 against them, so, like...
You were 3-0 down.
Yeah, I scored an own goal as well in that game. Yeah. Yeah. It's Suarez. Benzema shouldn't even be on that list for me, if I'm honest with you, but Lewandowski as well... decent player, but not on the same level as Suarez.
Keith?
Suarez is my favourite player on that list, and in his pomp, without a shadow of a doubt. But for the balance of the team, I went with Lewandowski, because I've been a big fan of his. In terms of an actual striker, hold-up play, the types of finishes, I think he's been a top striker about Dortmund and Munich.
Graham, since you've come all this way, we'll give you the deciding casting vote.
Oh, Suarez all day for me.
Yeah.
Well, but he's a warrior.
Type of guy you'd love to have played with?
Yeah. I think, you know, to play against him, he'd be a pain in the arse. But I think if he's with you, you would love him.
I think we have a consensus then on our 11, don't we? That was very straightforward, wasn't it? Bloody hell. We are, of course, here tonight with thanks to Virgin Media Sport, who have over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games live this season. All the games available to all Virgin Media TV customers, who can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream the action whenever and wherever they like. So let's get on to the next few weeks, because all these games are going to be live on Virgin Media Sport, starting tomorrow night with Liverpool against Atletico Madrid. Where Liverpool are at the moment, Keith, 25 points clear at the top of the Premier League. They've won 25 of 26 games, 17 in a row, having previously gone 17 in a row in the Premier League, and now 10 clean sheets in the last 11. When you look at that Liverpool side, is there any weakness? What's the bus driver done wrong?
Look, it's very difficult to really highlight any glaring problems in that team, because it's been a magnificent season. It's going to be a tricky tie, because we know what way Simeone sets his teams up. They've gone through a bit of a transitional stage with the old guard leaving, and they've had injury troubles up front. The season hasn't gone well when they thought it would have domestically, with Barcelona and Real Madrid not exactly having a great season as well. So it's not going to be easy, but I fully expect them to get through the tie. I expect them to win in Madrid, and I expect them to get through both legs, because they're just on a crest of a wave. They have that air of invincibility about them at the moment.
The likes of Godin are obviously gone, Graham, and Diego Costa has been injured for the vast majority of the season. So the sort of nastiness that maybe we'd associate with Atletico Madrid isn't there. And even when you look at the starting 11s of recent La Liga games, it's almost unrecognisable from the team of recent seasons. But the danger, it seems, is that they have this European know-how. Is that a thing? Is that something you found with certain sides, that even when there's been a change in personnel, that if you have a manager who knows how, like it's often said about Mourinho, if you have a manager who knows how to win these ties?
You get, how many questions was that?
Take your pick.
You get to the stage, it's, you know, there's no mugs anymore. You know, there's no whipping boys. I mean, I fully expect Liverpool, you know, Liverpool are the team that no one wants to play right now. You know, it's not a one-off. It's over two games. I just can't see Liverpool having two bad nights. I mean, they're a very, very disciplined, special team right now. Keith says they are in transition. The little Portuguese guy has not really done it for them. 13 points off behind the leaders. It's not the same Atletico team. And I see Liverpool having two good nights, not just one against them.
Damien, you described, I think, very well earlier in the season how Liverpool have maybe changed a couple of things and how they pinned teams right back and played this incredibly high line and trust that the centre-backs and Van Dijk will be so good and sort of suffocate opponents, don't let them out. Maybe we saw that again against Norwich during the week, and it means they're just on this run where you always feel they're going to score. Does that suit them in European football as well? Because a lot of the games over the last couple of years that they've won have been sort of helter-skelter games. It feels like they've kind of gone away from that.
If you were looking at Liverpool from a tactical point of view, the only thing you might be worried about, the only chink you might see in their arm is you might get caught in a counter-attack with a bit of pace, because when they go full press, if you can pass through that press, you are at Fabinho, and then, you know, if you can break quickly, it's very, very difficult. When I say a chink, it's a chink. That's all it is. The only trouble I see for Liverpool at the moment is, can they maintain the tempo they've set? Because they've been going like this for 18 months now. I mean, they have really been like foot to the floor for 18 months. You worry with their little drop off, and if they do have a little drop off, and I mean, the Premier League's done, but if they have a little drop off in Europe, they will get caught without shadow of a doubt. Maybe not against Atletico, but definitely in the next round when they play a top team. So the biggest challenge for me now is maintaining what they're doing, and if they maintain that, they will win the European Cup again.
I mentioned Diego Costa there. Obviously, he's a huge loss to Atletico Madrid. When you talk about players you played against in the Premier League, and Suarez has been a nightmare.
Yeah.
What was Costa like?
They're very similar. They're just players play with a chip on their shoulder. You know, they walk on the pitch, you can tell they're just angry about something, you're not sure, but there's something there's something wrong with them, you know, and they're just permanently like that. And they look at you and they just go, you're getting it today and that's it. And you kind of go, all right, fair enough. And then you just, I love those types of players. They just naturally like that. Now, off the pitch, you could be a lovely fellow. I don't know the fellow or anything, but when they're on a football but when they're on the pitch, they have a point to prove and they're quite upset about something, and I love that.
Who was nastier then, Suarez, Costa, or Keith Andrews?
Keith was vicious with his tongue, I tell you.
When you were playing against Acosta or Suarez, did you feel that you could be more aggressive, you could be more abrasive, that they could take it a bit more?
I think so, yeah. You know, especially when you used to play against, like, Troy Deeney. You just love playing against, because, you know what I mean? He chat away to you during the game and you'd be kicking seven shades out of each other, and the referee, sometimes referee, I remember before, asked the two of us, is he all right? And he says, grand. And he goes, nothing. And he goes, no, let's get on when we're grand. And the two of us just get on with it, like, you know. And that's kind of going out of football right now, you know. But so people like Deeney and those types of players, I enjoy those physical battles.
Brian, is your sense that this isn't the Atletico Madrid of old?
No, my sense is that they'll make it very awkward for Liverpool, as they always do. They've the lowest scoring team in the top half of the Spanish league this year. I think they're on 26 and 24 games. They've conceded very few, the usual. They'll be tight. The whole back four is gone that we knew, Juan Fran, Philippe Luis, Godin, Jimenez, they're all gone. They've still got Savic there, who knows a bit. But the midfield is still Sol, Negres, Koke, Thomas Partey, Correa, decent player, Argentinian fellow. Morata's playing up front now, and I don't think Joao Felix will make it. Costa, I think he's trying today, there might be a chance he'd play, but you know, they'll make it awkward for Liverpool. They're unbeaten in the last 13 Champions League games at home, and English teams have a very poor record away to them. I know Liverpool won the Champions League there, but English teams have struggled against Atletico away. I think they'll make it very awkward. And they'll be dangerous at set pieces. They pulled out against Juventus in the group. We did a group match. Juventus beat them 2-0. They got the two goals off set pieces late in the match, headers. So they'll be the same Simeone style, awkward, scrapping, hard battling, filling in all the gaps. But it's a better Liverpool team than they would have played before. And I think we would beat them over the two legs, but not easy. And Liverpool, knockout rounds last year, they were great. But in the group, they lost all the away games in the group last year. And they lost to Napoli away in the group this year. So they haven't always been, you know, well, they did their stuff against Bayern Munich and Porto last year. What's the other one?
Well, look at what happened to Barcelona.
Barcelona, obviously, the Barcelona, they turned it round at home, but they won the other. So, you know, if they don't do their stuff in the away match, Atletico would be hard to break down if they get a lead.
Grim, where are you on Jordan Henderson? He's favourite to be Footballer of the Year. Mm. He's probably the most discussed player in this Liverpool team in some ways, because a lot of time it feels like it's not taking him. What he does this season is that he's in the shadows of the great midfielders such as yourself and Steven Gerrard. And is he at that level? Has he reached that level? Is he perfect for this Jurgen Klopp side, or has he brought his game up to a level maybe people didn't expect?
Well, the way I describe the Liverpool team, you know, fantastic goalkeeper. You know, three out of the back four are arguably best in the positions in the world right now. So great back four with Gomez. A workaholic midfield. You know, there's not a De Bruyne, there's not a Silva, whether it's Bernardo or David. There's not that type of player, but they complement the front three. They just win it and get it to those as quickly as they can. Great energy, you know. They must be extremely fit. When I watch Liverpool play, you look at them and it's as if they're fitter than the teams they're playing against. You know, they're first to the ball and they can go longer. Great energy levels from the three midfield players. You wouldn't say their asset. You know, when you talk about these three players, you wouldn't say their asset is their technique. I'm not being harsh on them because they've got so many positives. Their biggest asset is their energy levels and the amount of work they put in every time they play. And, you know, what you said about them, that would be the danger. If they three dropped, the impact that would have on the team. But there's not boys where the Milner comes in. You know, it's Wijnaldum, Henderson, Fabinho comes in. They're not boys, they're men. And they know what they have to do to be effective at this level. I'm a fan. I think going back 2 weeks, I think I trotted out a stat that between the six midfield players, they'd only scored 7 goals. That might be 8 or 9 now. But I played with a guy who got 20 goals from midfield alone every year, Terry McDermott. You know, so is there room for improvement? Yeah, I'd like to see them scoring more goals. But you stand back and you look at them and think, would I like to play against them? I'm not sure. Because they're all over you from the first minute to the last. And I think it has to be a Liverpool player that wins Player of the Year. Whether Jordan will win it because he's not spectacular in anything he does, but he does the most incredible job for the team. And he would appear to be the most marvellous professional in the dream to work with.
In terms of where Liverpool may develop then over the next 2 or 3 years, do you think the midfield is an area Klopp will look at for that type of Silva-type player, or do you think actually he just wants that energetic type?
If you go back a year, he signed Keita and tried to sign Fakir from Lyon. You know, he wanted more goals from there. But what he gets from the current 3 or the current 4 in terms of work rate, faultless. Yeah, you want that and goals, I suppose. Where you find it, or if you can afford it, or if they're out there, I'm not sure. But even that midfield, Ronaldo must be about 29 now, is he? Henderson, 28. Fabinho, 26. You know, so there's still plenty of life left in them.
Did you play against Jordan Henderson?
Yeah, when he was younger, Sunderland days. I think he has improved this year. We were just chatting before we came on. And I think a big part of that is probably down to the belief that the rest of the squad and his manager and probably fans, media as well, have got into him. I think he's a huge driving force. But I also think he has improved on the ball. If you go back a year where Graham would have been saying about the Liverpool midfield, maybe we're in studio, there's no creativity, there's not enough creativity, but they do other parts of the game very real. I think his decision-making and his delivery, especially when he's drifted into wider areas, has improved. I think he has gone on a notch.
If he decides to change that midfield, it has to be like for like, because you can't put a Bernardo Silva in there, you couldn't put a Coutinho in there, because when they go full press and the front six go and the two full-backs go, if one's not doing it, or one switches off, or one's not where he should be, and you're out, now you're straight at the back three, and that can't happen that often. But those front six and the two full-backs, when they go, they all go, and they're where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there. If he was to bring in a type of player, it would require a huge shift in mentality for the football club, almost an evolution in the way they play. But right now, they just set a tempo, and they go, you can't live with us, and that's what they do.
I think if you go back to the Man City game last year at the Etihad, when they lost the game, I don't know if people remember Bernardo Silva's performance that night. He covered the most ground in the game. He put the hard yards in, but he was also extremely creative. I take your point. You know, these players are really, really hard to find, but there will be players out there that can do a bit of everything.
He has evolved the team, though, as it's gone on over the last 18 months, hasn't he? They've gone from a devastatingly efficient counter-attacking team. So now they are controlling games.
Well, the thing that changed them dramatically more than anything else was signing the goalkeeper.
And the centre-half.
You know, they went from a team that you knew they had a weakness to a team now that if you're a coach planning to play against them, you're thinking, where can I target? Where can I see we'll get some joy? You know, what do? You bully the front three? You can't really bully anyone in a modern game. Are you going to outwork the middle three? That ain't going to happen. I tell you what I do, we'll target the centre-halves. Forget it. Forget getting in a race with Van Dijk. Forget trying to out-jump him. Think I'll mess him around physically. Forget it. Let's get the full-backs in a race. Forget it. So
What a lot of teams that I saw them playing against tried to do is wait and hope that the two full-backs are up at the same time and the centre-halves are split a bit and try and get someone in over the top behind the full-backs. But you said they have the pace. Also, the goalkeeper is smart. They get away with playing such a high line at times because the goalkeeper's already out. He's out 30 yards waiting to start. And they can...
But Brian,
they just control him.
That's how the Liverpool team I played like that. Clem and Bruce would stand outside their box. We were right up to the halfway line, and what they used to say to us, and that's all the top teams. Oh, and that's
I wasn't suggesting it was new. What I was saying was that's how they're doing it now, and they couldn't do it when they had the other two goalkeepers that were liable to do something mad.
All the top teams today, what they would say to us, trust me, there's nothing new in football. They would say to us, look, we know we'll get caught occasionally. We're not a team that's going out to play offside, but we hold a high line, and as long as the midfield player or a striker was putting the ball under pressure, we could hold the line at the back. And it was only when the man on the ball did something clever and got time to get his head up, they would start thinking about going back. And they said to us, we know we'll get caught. We might get caught 5, 6, maybe 10 times a season. But the benefits to playing like that, where every part of the team, the back, the midfield and the strikers are all in touch with each other. There's no big gaps. The benefits over the 60 games, whatever we play, is enormous. And we will get caught occasionally. And we'll take that on the chin. All the top teams do it. City do it. Barcelona do it. All the top teams. If you're looking to press high, everybody has to be up the pitch together.
Are you more likely to get caught against the top teams? Or is it a case that they're just not used to it?
Because when, you look at Norwich the other night, Hanley playing on the 18-yard line, trying to dribble past players and play football. Deary me. You know, when you get against good players, they can do that, get past that first press, then that's when Liverpool will be in trouble. But right now, against the standard of playing in the Premier League, other than City, maybe Chelsea on a good day, United on a good day, no one else is going to hurt them.
So do you think you might change that against as they go on in the Champions League?
No, I think Liverpool right now are feeling invincible, and so they should be, undefeated. I come back to when you asked me the question, we never ever spoke about the opposition. It was just about, you make sure you do your job, and there's nothing for them across the corridor in the away dressing room. Just do your job, and I think that's where this current Liverpool team are. They just believe in what they're doing. They're men now. They've got, a group of men that, for a manager to manage that group now, he's just reminding them all the time. And the senior players will be doing all the work for the manager.
So is the sense from the four of you that tomorrow night might be a bit of a struggle, but over the two legs, Liverpool will have more than enough?
Liverpool could always come unstuck, and it is going to happen. But I think over two games, I think they'll get through against anyone right now.
Looking at the other English teams who were left then, yesterday on the show we were at Villa Park, as Aston Villa dominated Spurs for 20-25 minutes, Tottenham win, much like a couple of weeks ago where they were destroyed for long parts by Manchester City, Spurs win, they're up against Leipzig on Wednesday night. Is there a bit of character there under Jose Mourinho? Is there that know-how of European football that Mourinho can somehow instill, or are Spurs a million miles away from where they were this time last year, 18 months ago, Brian?
I think they're a long way away from it. I think a lot of the morale was sucked out of them in the early part of the season with Pochettino, who was seemed edgy pre-season, wasn't happy. And the Eriksen thing didn't help them. He was sitting around and didn't know whether to play him or not play him. And then they had to play him because they were struggling for players. But they've so many problems at the moment. The problem in goal, the two keepers are... Jesus, and like
Lloris 3-4 years ago was seen as one of the best keepers in the world.
He's had a couple of dodgy seasons now where he's not been certain, he's not been good in crosses, he's making rash running out of the box, the old clash one, will I stay or will I go? He always beating goals and leaves the goal open when he goes, right? He's done all right at the weekend, but he's liable to make. And the back four, the full backs, earlier, he's a disaster waiting to happen every match. I mean, it's only when is he going to do it? When is he going to give away a penalty or nearly give away a penalty? He got away with murder at the weekend. He should have been booked in the first few minutes of the match, and he managed to survive the whole game. The other side has been a struggle as well. When Vertonghen has played there, he's been very poor. They let Rose go. He was brutal as well. And he was. He was prone to error, making mistakes. You can't rely on any of the... Alderweireld is the best of centre-halves. And we saw, looking back to Aaron Connolly running by him and scoring the goals. But, he's the best of them. But you can't... there's not a reliable format there, Winks in the middle of the field.
They lost 20 games last year.
Sorry?
They lost 20 games last year. But
they'll be heading for that again this year when it comes to everything.
That was a fluke last year.
They're down 8 already this year, but in the league. But the midfield is Lo Celso, it looks like he's going to be the one playing beside Winks. Started Dyer at the weekend again. I think he often matches his name. And
Eric.
Look, I mean, they won the match, and you have to.
You
look
can take
at
that one back to Sky at the weekend.
Yeah. I'll go down really well, yeah.
I think, like, Leipzig, it can be hard to grade German football where it is at the moment. Leipzig, I watched the match at the weekend. They beat Werder Bremen 3-0. Timo Werner, right, he scores 20 league goals already this season. Smashing attacking team. Coach is very clever, Nagelsmann. He mixes it up in the style and in the formations. High energy team. But Spurs beat Dortmund very easily last year over the two games, 3-0, 1-0. So, and some of the German teams have had hidings in the Champions League. Spurs got a hiding off Bayern Munich 7-2. But I don't know where to grade the rest of the teams in Germany outside Bayern Munich. So at the moment, I would think Leipzig are favourites because of Spurs' unpredictability and the lack of stability about the team. Now Harry Kane.
You know, he's a Spurs supporter, don't you?
Really? They should have put that online somewhere.
He's our Spurs
stage
correspondent.
Now, well, so you keep accusing me. You don't show your hand as being a bit of Spurs yourself. Going back, he's still giving out about not getting his youth cup medal when he played for Spurs. Tell them, come on, tell them the story. Yeah. Tell them, come on.
Did you not get your medal?
When I was winning the FA Youth Cup's a big deal when you're a young player. Did you ever?
Damien was just telling me they had a reunion.
Did you win
of the Cork
team? Well, I won an FAIU Cup.
Also very important.
Just as valuable, Graham.
Just as important.
I got my medal as well. So.
This is an outrageous story. So we play Coventry City in the final. The first game is a two-legged final. First game at home, we win 1-0, and I scored a goal. The second game, we lose 1-0, and I got booked. So they tossed up for the third game. The third game was Highfield Road. We drew 2 each, and unbelievably, I got sent off. So
no VAR.
So then the fourth game was back at White Hart Lane, and we win 1-0, and I scored the winning goal. I didn't get a fucking medal. I got my £6 bonus, £6 for winning it, but no medal.
Why?
The rules state you can't get a medal. Bill Nick said he'd get me a medal made, but I'm still waiting.
So we kind of follow Spurs, except he didn't get his medal.
What do you make of Spurs then? So, like, even looking at the midfield, it feels like even under Pochettino, the midfield was always in a bit of a state of flux. He seemed to change players every season.
They were near miss. Going back 18 months, 2 years, I thought Spurs were a really good team. But a clever investment then didn't happen. And they've just drifted off again. All the chat, new stadium, football decisions about getting players into the last 6 months, 12 months of a contract. I don't think that's been managed very in a clever way. Where are they right now? I saw them lose to Chelsea, deservedly so, at the New Lane. I saw them beat City. Shouldn't have won that game. I saw them on the television beat Southampton in the FA Cup. Shouldn't have won that game. And at the weekend, didn't start well, but, I mean, the wind was causing havoc for most of them. Conceded a couple of dodgy goals, but I've got a fancy the Germans. I just think they're a team playing with a tail up. Tottenham are a team scratching around for their best formation. I think the manager will improve them, but wrong time to play a good team.
Obviously hugely hampered as well by the loss of Harry Kane, Keith. But
enormously.
Dele Alli, even watching him yesterday, like when he gets on the ball, something always seems to happen, but there are large parts of the game.
He falls over. What game were you watching?
You're not having that. Dele Alli from where he was 2 or 3 years ago, and you were with him at MK Dons when he was sort of making that breakthrough. Like, it felt as though he was going to become one of the great English midfielders. Why do you think it stalled?
He changed his tack there, did you notice?
A little bit.
He was going all big on Dele Alli.
I was saying how frustrating it was to watch yesterday. That there were moments.
No,
moments?
You're right. 3-4 years ago, you thought he was going to be a star.
Mm. He typifies Spurs, doesn't he? Let's be honest. Over the last 18 months, 2 years, all the reasons the lads have mentioned, Brian went down a bit, a few of the players, the stadium situation, the lack of signings, the managerial change. It's a struggle. If they get top four this year, and if they progress a little bit further in the Champions League, it's been a very good season. He has to put a stamp on that team, Mourinho, whether he'll be allowed to do that financially, not so sure, but it is a struggle. They're not great to watch. They're grinding out results. They're getting results that they don't probably deserve. Like, Villa should have been out of sight. They had the chance to do it in the first half yesterday. They didn't take them. And then they mess up. But it's not a Mourinho team. It doesn't look like a Mourinho team. Lo Celso and Harry Winks playing midfield, and they would be the ones I would go with at the moment, because Eric Dyer looks like he's sulking, can't get around the pitch, probably never could. So it's a struggle. It's a struggle all round. And I just think it's at a stage now where he's just trying to get results. And this is going to be a tricky one.
It'll be interesting for Jose to see where he wants to go as a coach, because he's kind of in a middle ground at the minute, insofar as everyone was saying that his tactics and the way he did things was outdated and needs to change. And he comes into Tottenham. Is he going to bring this young coach, 30, 31 years of age, is he going to evolve into this kind of more expansive coach, or will he just revert to type and say, I'm winning trophies and that's it? But when you look at that Spurs team there's not many players you would say are Jose type players. Harry Winks for sure isn't a six that would kind of lend itself to a Jose team. Harry Winks is a Tottenham player, neat and tidy, good on the ball, wants it, keeps it moving, energetic, but he gets run past quite a lot and he gets run over quite a lot. So Aurier isn't a solid right back. There's a lot of flimsy players in that Tottenham team at the minute, a lot of tired players in that Tottenham team in the minute. They were kind of at the limit as well. It's gone a little bit stale, so it needs a clear out, whether Jose will get to do that or not. And if he does get to do that, I'd be so curious to see which way he goes. Will he just revert to type and get Jose Mourinho type players, Ballacks, you know, tough men and no football and can get you games, don't care about aesthetics, or will he actually evolve and try and bring in a couple of more easy on the eye players?
Next week, obviously, a huge game then to look forward to, Manchester City against Real Madrid, which is, I'm sure, still going to be overshadowed by the news that City are facing a 2-year ban for financial fair play. Brian, what have you made of it all?
I think it's been brewing for a few years, the accusations against Manchester City. I don't think that clubs could afford to ignore the financial fair play rules when they come in. They may have thought, or City may have thought, that they'd be able to get away with it by the methodology they used for, it seems, covering up the amount of money that was coming in on the sponsorship side of it. That seems to be the core problem. I kind of heard some information, Stephen, just on my way in, that they implicated themselves in some of the statements that they made, and the paperwork they gave over to UEFA at the time. I find it hard to believe. I think that the atmosphere at the match, their home match, will be affected by this, because already the crowds, their fans, haven't been too happy with UEFA. They haven't filled the stadium for matches. Mm. They've never seemed to have the same buzz about trying to win the Champions League, even though that's what the leadership want and what the manager wants. Their supporters seem to have been very ambivalent, I'd say, about it. So I think that that's not going to help them in this game. I don't think that 2-year ban will be implemented. I think they will spend as much money as they possibly can to try and get it overturned. They'll go to CAS first, and then they will, if that doesn't work for them, they'll go to the Swiss Supreme Court, which I think is the next stage after CAS. I can't see a 2-year ban. The best, from City's point of view, I can see happening is that they get away with a huge fine. The second best is they get the 1-year ban, which all the other clubs in the Premier League would be very happy about, particularly the ones from third place down. That would get them into a possible Champions League place. They finish fifth as they are at the moment. Whoever's fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth will all be thinking, now we have a better chance. I don't understand it well enough to say if they're guilty, But what the system does, it seems to protect the richest clubs and keep them strong and powerful, that a new owner coming into another club can't decide to put in 100 million of his own money to bring a club up to the level of those clubs. Once the financial fair play was introduced, around 2012, I think it was, that's what that did. So say Leicester's owner decided that they wanted to put 100 million, 200 million in to buy better players than they have. They would not be able to do that. They would not be allowed to do that.
It's designed to protect the big clubs.
Protect the top teams. To protect the ones that are already City in power.
I can't believe City, the only team...
So
yeah, what are you saying?
That they have the backing of a country.
It's run by a country. It's not run by a collection of people that have built up a business over time, like the people that own Leicester.
Yeah, see, I'm reluctant to criticise them. Have you been to East Manchester?
No.
I mean, you really have to go there and see. I mean, they've not just built a football club. You know, the infrastructure in that part of East Manchester, they're completely... They've spent... I would say whatever they've spent on the football team, they've spent twice as much as that on the infrastructure around East Manchester. Now, it's not all bad for them. I don't believe they're the only guilty ones. I think there's a very obvious one out there that's equally as guilty. But the whole system stinks. It was created by big clubs to protect themselves. So if you're... But if you're a big club and you generate, you know, 250 million, 300 million, 400 million a year from all your incomes, then you can spend a percentage of that and you're not breaking the financial fair play. But if you're a small club and you're not generating that money, but you have a benefactor that's willing to put, you can't break into that cartel, the big clubs. And I think this story's got a long way to run. I think it'd be wrong to prejudge any of it. And I think this could go on for years and years and years.
Graham, if I was to say to you that you would say that this has been instigated by the old guard in Europe, the aristocrats, your ACs, your Inters, because they're a little bit worried now that they can't even get into the Champions League. It's getting further and further away from them. So the PSGs and the Man Cities.
I wouldn't look too far from the other team in Manchester.
Do you think there's a worry that they're getting left behind because they don't have oil money or they don't have Russian money, and that they've slapped Man City down? They're almost viewed as the nouveau riche of Europe, and the aristocrats are a little bit unhappy that these guys are taking it further and further away.
See, I think, you know, the Premier League is now officially the best, the most watched league in the world. You know, we're doing a bit of that, aren't we? If we're seem to be joining in the criticism. The Premier League is never... English football has never been in a better place.
But I'm saying your AC Milans, your Inter Milans, the old guard of Europe, your Ajaxes, it's getting further away from them, you know?
It wouldn't be Ajax. It would be more... You know, I think there's some big clubs in the UK, obviously, not happy with it. The two big guys in Spain, but they have an obvious advantage. The television rights, as I understand it, over there are not... It's not pooled and it's all distributed evenly. Mm. It's not pooled. They do their own television deals, so they get far more. Barca and Real get far more than anybody else, as I understand it. So that's unfair. So, I mean, I played in Italy. Italy, their games were financed. Their football clubs were financed by very, very wealthy individuals. Now they've, you know, they've disappeared. Now they've got Chinese owners. So, and I'm sure, you know, they're putting their hands in their pocket to help their cause. Inter spent a great deal of money this year, haven't they? But yeah, you know, it's the way the game's evolved. And for the likes of Italian football, they've been left behind. French have been left behind. And when you've got the two big guys in Spain, so then they feel left behind, then obviously something's going to crack.
And I feel they just did this just to put the brakes on these Arabs and PSG.
I don't believe they'd be the only ones. I don't believe Man City alone, they'd be the only ones in the dock. And I think there's a lot of water to go under the bridge on this.
Does it tarnish what they've done, Keith, do you think? Like, they did sign up for financial fair play. They agreed to the terms, and from what we've read, they broke them. So, like, everybody was blown away with what Pep Guardiola's done over the last couple of years. Does it tarnish the achievement?
It's no secret that Pep Guardiola has spent vast sums of money at that football club. It's fairly evident from the transfer fees that get reported. Whether they were living beyond their means, we don't really know, because it's all, the moment they've been charged with this in terms of Champions League, but in terms of Premier League, it's too hard to criticise. I'm a big fan of his in terms of what he's brought, but there's no doubt he has spent serious cash to get the players he needs for those positions.
That's going to be a hard argument to have, isn't it? You know, you've been accused of inflating your commercial deals, your sponsorship deals. You know, if a company says, well, that's how I valued it and that's what I was willing to pay, okay, I'm sure they can link the companies that's paying it back to
their owners.
Yeah. But then again, you know, I'm sure they'll have the smartest lawyers in the world arguing their cause. But I come back to, for the sake of the Premier League, as we sit here right now, has Man City enhanced the Premier League? I think you have to say yes, with the football they've played, the players they've brought to the Premier League. Who wouldn't want to watch De Bruyne play, or Silva play, Aguero play? Why are you pulling the face?
Well, I'm thinking of, say, the rugby comparison with, say, Saracens, who broke the salary cap, and Saracens have been the best rugby team in Europe, a joy to watch. But essentially, it's cheating. Like, other teams could have done that.
That's a salary cap. That's a whole different argument. There's lots of big guys out there in world football.
But again, Manchester City, not every team was doing what Manchester City were doing.
I don't think they're alone.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they're all out. They have to be.
Don't play that bit out. From a Champions League this year, so
it's a commercial world. Football is a commercial world. It's never been more commercial. There's never been as much interest in football, and it's attracted some very, very powerful and wealthy men throughout Europe, not just in the UK. And I'm loath to be critical of
this. Yeah. Well, that I guess is the greater problem, that football has looked to attract these incredibly powerful people, and you can't be then surprised when they're going to do everything in their power to achieve success.
The extremely rich people are used to getting their own way. They're used to being successful.
Somebody's
one follows
phone,
the other.
Somebody's phone has been going for the last half an hour telling them to get home, so we better wrap this up. We didn't really touch on Chelsea. They're playing Bayern Munich and maybe how far Manchester City
Chelsea
can go.
How's Chelsea doing tonight?
Manchester United 1, 2-0. Is that over?
There's more Man United supporters now, isn't there?
They're coming out of the woodwork, aren't they?
Who scored the goals?
Harry Maguire and Martial.
Pogba, no?
No sign of him still. It's not over just yet. Who's going to win the Champions League? What have we just done?
Liverpool.
Liverpool, I'd say, yeah.
Real Madrid.
Woof. Threw it in
you
there
know
at the
I
end.
I always go for something quirky.
is there a reasoning behind it?
Looking at the team, I think they might have the bit between their teeth again to do it. They haven't looking around at the others last year. And they, after Christmas, their focus always gets stronger. But they could be knocked out next week.
So you're sitting on the fence, is what you're saying.
It's easy to go for Liverpool.
See, if you're Man City, if you're Pep Guardiola, he's using this now to fire up his players. Everyone's again. Fergie did it at Aberdeen. Fergie did it at Man United. No one likes us. We don't care. It's about us. And you can bet Pep's doing the same thing. You know, that's his mentality.
We've been here tonight with thanks to Virgin Media Sports, where you'll be able to catch the lads over the next couple of nights. They have over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games live this season. All available to all Virgin Media TV customers. If you can download the TV Anywhere app and stream the action whenever and wherever that you like. My thanks to everybody here at the Alex Hotel. Everybody behind the scenes for putting this together. To Virgin Media Sports. To all you guys for coming out on this Monday night. Give it up for our panel as well. For Brian Kerr. Damien Delaney, Keith Andrews, and Graeme Souness. Safe home, good night.